Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. We have our new season. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione. Ant, how are you?
Doing good, Russell. Ready to roll.
Well, we're doing this on September 11th, so we do want to remember everybody that was a first responder and lost their lives, lost loved ones. So we do remember you, and, you know, we have limited time here, but I just wanted to mention that.
Absolutely, and we are certainly reflective of that, and we never forget that.
No. All right, so before we even start the show, you know, Shane Malloy, who does the My XM show with me, is in Penticton for, you know, a rookie tournament, and sure enough, you look on online and you see Jake Virtanen just smacking the snot out of Connor McDavid, and totally legit hit. That's, you know, one of the fun parts of Jake's game, and he, you know, not only is he a great skater, really great skill guy, but now that he's totally healthy with the shoulder, you know, I've been trying to tell people there's a reason that Vancouver moved some spots out. They probably have their sights on him moving in, and I could tell you that he's excited about that.
No, no question. It was kind of watching the replay on that. It was a full-on, clean, I'll call it an exuberant hit on McDavid. And it was a welcoming moment. And I'm sure Jake was more than happy to test himself out and targeting the golden child, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, but that's, you know, if you want to make an impact, that's how you do it as a hockey player, whether people like that or not, that's the way it is. I could tell people that for this season, we're going to have a lot of interviews from a time that I was at the NHLPA rookie photo shoot, myself and David Wright, and so we'll play those as our commercials for this year, and Jake Virtanen's actually in those, so at some point it'll play. And he wasn't out on the ice the same time that I was there with McDavid, except when they played, but they played in an exhibition game. So they didn't do that at that time. But now when it's a few more bright lights and getting closer to training camp, you know, he's got something to prove. And this is the part of rookie games that can be a lot of fun. But then again, teams probably cringe when they see that and say, ugh. You know, so some teams will stay away from these kinds of tournaments and some won't. I like it. I think it's good.
Yeah, I agree. Completely agree. I wouldn't mind seeing, I think it's only, I think the number of somebody, I think Bill Meltzer mentioned that there's only three teams, that I think it's the Flyers, the Avs, and I think it was it the Islanders that are not involved in some form of a multi-team rookie tournament this year. So seems to be something that's definitely being pushed more and more, and I think it's certainly a good thing, you know, especially with the season about to roll around here pretty soon. You get a nice look at some of these players, and you know, and you know they're going to be hungry because they're trying to push for gigs, and it's fun again. It's good to see you get started and we get that itch scratched after several months. So that's pretty good in that respect.
Yeah. So we'll move on. Not much to say really about this Blackhawks deal. I mean, it really was a salary dump with Chris Verstee going to Carolina. I mean, Joachim Nordstrom is a fourth line middling kind of guy, and they basically gave up a third to get a fifth so they can unload a salary. But the interesting part is, just to show you how capped out they are, is like they only have Marcus Krueger for a year, where they're having to do all this maneuvering just to get in a guy for this year. That's rough.
Exactly. Yeah, it's definitely rough for them, and for Carolina again, a team that was you know, a bit thin on the right side. I think, you know, certainly a little thin on the right side when you got Andre, as much as you know, Andre Nestreisel is potentially your second line right wing. It does allow them to sort of maneuver things around here better for Carolina to have a guy like Versteeg in there to play, you know, with Jordan Staal on that line, and it could be good for Carolina. Yeah. And they obviously have the space to add him. To add him as a part, but again, Chicago really wanted obviously to get Krueger back in, but again, they're so tight that they you know it was almost a tryout 1 year let's see how you go. And but that's where they're at as a team right now, Chicago. They really sort of, as we saw in the offseason, really shuffled the deck a lot, and they weren't finished shuffling, and they continue today.
Yeah, no real update on Patrick Kane other than the postponement for the grand jury. Nobody seems to know why it happened, but it's obviously going to go on, roll on, whatever you want to say about it, and it's going to happen soon. It'll be on a collision course, it seems, with the opening of training camp, and that'll be the interesting thing to see what happens there, if he's able to go to training camp or is he going to sort of be held back. So we, you know, we have to sort of wait on that one.
Definitely, we're going to have to see with regards to that.
So we move on with that, and, you know, a lot of teams' camps are opening up. Flyers rookie camp opens up Monday. I'll be there Monday, and we'll see how some of these guys look. I mean, I got a nice look at Travis Sanheim, you know, at that same rookie get-together week and a half, 2 weeks ago, whatever it was. Sam Morin, you know, they both look really good, but the Flyers have so many defensemen. It's really going to be hard to crack the lineup, even for Provorov, who I think the world of. Same thing, but you know, Sanheim is really happy to compete with all these guys. That's the funny thing. He seems very up for it. And so they're going to go down probably to the bitter end. You know, they'll get a few. Everybody will probably get a few preseason games in there, and then the Flyers will have to make some tough decisions. But the good thing is I don't think there's a team in the league that has a young defense core that's not NHL tested that's as good as theirs. And so that's something where if they looked at, you know, the New York Rangers and the guys they were able to bring up slowly, you know, they brought up Girardi, they brought up McDonough, they Staal, they got those guys together playing as a unit, and that's been carrying them a long way. Flyers are, you know, following that same model, really.
It's been a very successful model for the Rangers, certainly for the LA Kings as well. They didn't rush their guys. As well, and have certainly come along. And again, Ron Hextall working out, you know, in Los Angeles over time has, you know, been observing patterns around the league as well as his own teams as well, recognizing the fact that defense is one of those things that it's not a microwave situation, it's a slow cooker situation, and you got to make sure it's, you know, the player is ready to go. Now again, We talk about certainly the amount of defensemen the Flyers have, and certainly you know, seven or eight deep here. And again, how does a young defenseman then essentially crack that blue line? Again, you can outperform, but also I think the window really, I think if all things are equal and the blue line's healthy for the most part, most of the young defense, just about all the young defensemen will either be playing for the Phantoms. I think this year certainly it's going to be. I think it'll be, you know, the Phantoms will have Haig, Gostisbehere, now again a healthy Shane Gostisbehere, getting in, you know his first true full season as a pro, and of course Sam Morin gets that start, and again Provorov I think has a chance to really sort of push things, but I think ultimately he probably ends up back in Brandon, barring injuries to the Flyers blue line, and even then, even with a few injuries, they still I think have enough. You know, have enough bodies, I guess you could say. Now, you want to say whether or not these are game breakers, obviously. They're not, you know, most of them are not. But if it's, again, a choice for Ron Hextall, he'd rather err on the side of caution, I think, with his own defense and let them develop at a more nominal pace.
Yeah, unless something hits him in the face, I think that's the route he's going. I'm also seeing an interesting picture to switch gears on Twitter of the Las Vegas arena. They've poured cement. And now you could sort of see the sight lines a little bit and where the seats will be, and you know, it's shaping up slow, not that slowly really. I mean, it's actually shaping up pretty good, and so that's something where, you know, we're going to start to see that take shape real soon, and people will start thinking about a team there. It's really a long time coming. I remember I wasn't all that excited about it a few years ago, but you know, it's sort of grown on me. I don't know about you.
I mean, Vegas is an interesting thing. I'm certainly impressed by their in terms of the grassroots of getting the season ticket holders on board. I think the last I saw the report, and again, this is possibly old news, is the fact for an arena that's supposed to be in the 17,000 to 18,000 seat range, they have 13,000 season tickets. That's pretty darn impressive. Whether that's the novelty of a pro team in Vegas, that could very well be That could be very true in that respect. And if fans are willing to be patient with a younger expansion team and see it grow, and will they maintain that, to me, over the long haul, is going to be the big question that I'm going to have. But again, will it be a place to see or be seen? I have no doubt about that. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how this is going to play out. I mean, for me, being more of a traditionalist again, I'm a little more excited about Quebec City coming back into the NHL. But
right,
Vegas is going to be it's a great experiment. I don't think there's any question about that.
It is. Now, I don't know if anybody's diet has ever been talked about more in the off season than Phil Kessel, and it's funny how I'm seeing these headlines like, I ate healthier this summer. And it's like, look, he looks good. I got to give him credit. He looks like he's dropped about 10 or 15, and that's great. I never really looked at him as like a fat guy, and I think this is just something with evolution of him, that he's just learning how to eat better, because that just wasn't something that was a part of his regimen. It's going to help him this season, though. I'm pretty sure of that.
No, I think he has a lot of motivation. I think going to Pittsburgh, having the opportunity again. Again, let's face it. When he was in Toronto, when your pivot options is Tyler Bozak, not a knock against Bozak, but let's face it, you had the opportunity to play with a Sidney Crosby or with a Evgeny Malkin. It's going to give you a little bit of motivation, I'd say, and. It's going to be very interesting to see how Pittsburgh sort of shakes out and how things are going to work offensively for them, but obviously also defense is obviously going to be a big question mark for them as well. I mean, it's one thing to have the forwards, but it's another thing to have the defenseman who can spring load the offense transitionally. And certainly while Chris Letang is healthy, the remainder of that blue line concerns me in that department, and that's something that, you know, even with all the talent you might have up front, and you know, three-headed monster like that, you got to have the blue liners that are able to play that transitional game and get the puck up to those guys. So, it's going to be fascinating. But, again, with Phil, talented player, I think certainly this is probably the best spot for him in terms of he doesn't have to be the lead dog as he was in Toronto and paid as such.
Right.
Now he can settle into a secondary or third role here for Pittsburgh, and it may just be a much more comfortable situation for him.
I agree. All right, I'm going to play the Nick Ritchie spot. It'll play for about 2.5 minutes. Then we'll come back and we'll talk about the three first-round Boston Bruins prospects that didn't do so well in their in conditioning. Be right back.
Off the post, Les Cohen, David Wright, with Nick Ritchie of the Anaheim Ducks at the NHLPA Rookie Showcase. Nick, how are you, man? You're sweating a lot.
I know. I'm pretty tired today.
I mean, it's a photo shoot. Like, I don't even see models sweating that much at photo shoots.
Oh, no, I was skating pretty hard out there and during the drills, making sure I was doing everything pretty good. So.
And what's it like being the hardest working man at the photo shoot?
I don't know about that. I don't know. I guess I'm just sweating a lot today.
You're one of the big guys here. Did you have a reflex to drill somebody when they were in the corner and then realize, oh, wait, it's a photo shoot?
No, I don't think so. Obviously, there's a lot of people out here. It's pretty pretty relaxed, and it's not really a hockey game, so it's pretty easy to tune that off.
Now, with the size you have, obviously, you became a great hockey player, but was there another sport that you excelled at or were good at?
I used to play lacrosse as a kid all the way growing up, and it was hockey in the winter and lacrosse in the summer.
What's worse, getting hit with a hockey puck or a lacrosse ball?
I don't know. Probably a hockey puck, I think. Little sharper, probably a little heavier, too. So probably a hockey puck.
Now, you've been doing the photo shoot and stuff for Upper Deck here today for, like, the rookie cards and things like that. What's the process been like, and is there anything that's kind of surprised you about the process or that you've learned about trading cards and how they're made?
No, I don't think so. I think it's pretty standard. You're just signing things, and pretty much do all the rest of the packaging and stuff. So it's obviously nice to help out with that stuff, and it's been a fun couple of days, and it's pretty cool.
Now, did you yourself, as a kid or now, collect memorabilia or hockey cards or anything like that?
Yeah, when I was younger, I always collect cards. I think as a kid, I think most hockey players did, all the NHL stars and stuff like that, but. Now I don't really, but obviously, even kids these days are collecting cards, and it's I mean, when you're younger, it's a pretty big deal.
Who's the one card you had to chase or you had to have when you were collecting?
I don't really know. I was a pretty big Ovechkin fan, so I always liked him. So I always made sure I had one of his cards.
Now, did you get a special haircut for the shoot? Just figuring, hey, if they get a couple shots with the helmet off.
No, I haven't got my hair cut in a while. Actually, I could probably use a haircut. So, no, I just showed up a couple of days ago. Just how I was.
All right, thanks, Nick. Good luck this season, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
So, as you heard, some of his buddies, I think Robbie Fabry and Dal Cole, were sort of ripping him on his hair. That's why I asked him about it. They were having a good time. You'll see some of the guys get absolutely crazy. But Richie, the thing that got us about him was he had like this flop sweat. He couldn't stop sweating. It was great.
Oh, man. Some guys are just like that, you know, in terms of just how they perspire. And it's just like God knows when you got to deal when the trainers got to put that equipment into for cleaning.
Yeah. That's always gruesome. All right, so the Boston Bruins, you know, they made those three picks: Zobel, DeBrusk, Benchin. A lot of controversy with it, a lot of questions, and then all of a sudden we find out they didn't do so well in conditioning for their rookie camp. They failed to complete 6 back and forth 300 meter sprints in under a minute each per run. And you know, I'm reading, and you know, I don't see that for Brandon Carlo, who I thought was a first-round talent and ended up getting picked in the second round. So it does make you wonder, not long-term, but just these kids already came in for rookie camp, and now it seems like they didn't move forward yet in their progress. And I got to admit, that's the first time in a long time that I've seen like a trio of guys like that not move forward, because generally when I'm going into these camps, I do see a nice progression from July to September.
Yeah, that's true. And that's true. But I do remember, if I was reading the story from Joe Haggerty, they said there was issues, I think, with the conditions of the track, that it was wet.
Okay.
And that kind of played somewhat of a role. And then they missed it, but it sounds like they didn't miss it by a lot. But the conditions of the track, apparently, I got to find Joe Haggerty's piece on that.
Okay.
From TSN New England. But there is some extenuating circumstances that go with that. But again, it isn't good considering the fact that Boston did take a lot of criticism for some of the picks. Certainly, I think the Brawl and DeBrusk, we both would agree, graded out as first round guys. It was just most people anticipated them to be maybe 10 spots, maybe anywhere between 8 to 10 spots further back. The Senshin pick is the one that sort of really blew everybody's mind, that most people thought of him more as a third-round talent. And, again, that was the amazing domino effect of the remainder of that draft. And, again, we're always going to be in a debate about what Boston was doing there in terms of stacking 3 first-round picks in a row like that, and if they were trying to maneuver themselves upward for potentially, as we – discussion we talked about was possibly, maybe they were trying to get up high enough to get Noah Hanifin, being playing at Boston College and everything, and could be a guy who could replace. You could sort of look at and say, hey, he can replace Dougie Hamilton, who we dealt over the long haul. But again, it doesn't even with those extenuating circumstances, the story that gets out, that's kind of like almost par. It's been that kind of an off season for the Bruins. In terms of sort of where there's just you're sort of scratching your head on things, and again, even with the extenuating circumstances of what Haggerty mentions in his piece, it's still kind of like that's not good. That's not a good start. Not a good look.
True. So now, something I covered earlier, but I didn't talk to you about it. So if some people are hearing it again, tough. But a show that I've never watched, The Bachelorette, has a hockey theme now. TMZ is reporting that a star of it, J.J. Lane, is a guy who sort of plays pickup hockey. And in his pickup hockey game in Denver, somebody bit down on his pinky and almost lost the pinky. And basically one of his teammates had to hit the opponent on the back of the I'm in his back with the stick multiple times to get him to stop biting his pinky, and they showed went to the hospital and had to have stitches and everything else. And my feeling is, who are these guys that get this crazy playing beer league hockey? Seriously, pick up hockey.
People just, biting to me was kind of like one of those things that sort of drilled into as a kid to not do. It's one of the more disgusting things to do. I don't know. Again, some people have to get a grip. I would think, especially, even a pro level, the idea of biting somebody to me is sort of what are you doing? What's
crazy.
Your problem? But some people, again, their competitive drives just get to a point where it's just their moral compass kind of goes majorly askew, and you just don't quite wrap your brain around that. But again, competitive streaks run differently in different people. It doesn't excuse the action, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. So now another picture that I've seen are holding a one of those big pads, and I guess some MMA guy or somebody is just kicking him, full. And Kopitar doesn't have a shirt on, and he's generally not a guy that I think we think of being like really well built.
He's a tank. Kopitar's always been a tank. He's a big guy. I saw that picture myself. I'm like, that doesn't surprise me in the least. He's especially the way he plays. He plays really hard.
It's one of those things. Sometimes until you don't see him with the jersey on, you can't fully appreciate how big this guy is.
Mm-hmm.
But he really
is. He's a big boy. He's a tank. There's no question about that. He's an absolute Slovenian tank. No question about that.
Yeah, so that's, it's fun to see stuff like that, and all these guys in the off season. The NHL did their tour in Toronto, and Lundqvist was on there, and Kevin Allen actually said he was going to write an article about how well dressed Lundqvist was, and then he realized all the Swedes were really well dressed, so then he wrote an article about that, and I do find humor in all that. And then Lundqvist was just talking about how he felt like the Rangers were, a cup contender, and I feel like they are. And it's interesting how he is sort of I would say at this point in time, the biggest athlete in New York, and he's more of a glamour guy than a hardcore blue collar guy, even though when he's on the ice, he certainly plays that way.
Mm-hmm.
And really he's the first to me. Like Jeter wasn't even that much of a glamour guy, a little bit, but not that much. But like he seems to be like the first one since like Namath to really sort of embrace that.
Should we call it Swedish sartorial splendor? Maybe
Is
that how we should look at it? Yeah, listen, the man. We all know. I think he's a universally respected player. One of the best goalies I've ever seen play the game. Certainly watching him, watching him against the Flyers, you really, on a regular basis, you get an appreciation for just how good he really is. Again, from the perspective of the Rangers right now, it's kind of like they're as a team, he's so good, but the window is getting closer and closer, and they need it. It's one of those things this season where the Rangers are going to push it. I mean, that window is still there. It's still open. I think they probably have the best unit of six defensemen. If, a guy like Yandle, certainly Yandle plays well, and Boyle gets somewhat of a whisper of what he used to be, potentially. He's even a power play weapon. And guys, and as you undoubtedly know well enough, a guy like Brady Shea, if he's able to begin to push into the conversation eventually here, possibly during the season, I believe he's going to
maybe
this
during
year for
the
Hartford.
Season.
He'll
start with Hartford. Yeah.
So that's to me. Yeah, he's a fun. He's always been a fun player to watch. As frustrating as he may be for Flyers fans, if you're a hockey fan, there's no question he's at the top.
Now, conversely, even though the window's wide open for a team like Tampa, not having the right backup goalie can hurt your standings in the regular season, which could, slow you down in the playoffs and maybe get you a couple of tough seeds that you can't get past. And I kind of wonder if that's the boat they're in right now, because, look, Vasilevsky, that's going to be a huge loss. I mean, he really took a lot of pressure off Ben Bishop. Bishop was always known for not being able to really get through a full season, and now the pressure is right square back on Ben Bishop again.
Yeah, and there's no question. I think certainly looking, I mean, initially before, you know, earlier last season they had, I believe it was Danny Nabokov as backup, so, and they very quickly really realized that that wasn't going to work. And
then
Vasilevsky comes in and really able to sort of spell Bishop down the stretch, and he didn't have quite as many starts to worry about. And again, we're going to have to see where he's at. I think, and they're monitoring for like 2 to 3 months. They're sort of right back where they started. And Bishop is certainly going to be looking at getting the lion's share of the starts here, whether it's whether they keep Krister's Kuzlevsky's up with the team, or if they decide to, you know, offer a 1-year deal to you know, right now, right, obviously Ray Emery there under a PTO, but again, Flyer, anybody who's watching the Flyers recently knows, you know, Ray Emery's lateral movement is pretty questionable at this point now, and a team that plays with the pace that Tampa does, that could potentially be that could be some trouble there. So Tampa's in an interesting spot there. The whole Stamkos, the discussion of Stamkos playing the right wing regularly, to me is sort of, I know they did it last year during the postseason, but that somewhat concerns me a little bit over the long haul.
Sure.
Will he do it? I mean, if Cooper decides he wants
to do it.
But
what's the percentage chance in
it,
your mind that he leaves? What percentage chance do you put at him leaving?
You know, I had a pretty pegged pretty low before. It's still relatively low, but the meter moved a little bit, you know, not as
that's fair.
I'm maybe a little bit more uncertain. I still think he stays there. It's just, you know, if this is something that's really pushed over time, there's going to be plenty of NHL teams that are going to look at Steve Stamkos and say, don't worry about having to play right wing for us. You're going to be our top line center and you're going to be paid
right
as such. So, but I think over the long haul, I think you and I had the discussion before, if it's something that happens over during the course of the season, there may be a discussion between the general manager and John Cooper with regards to doing this over the long term if they're planning on keeping Stamkos around for a long stretch.
Yeah, I think 10% chance he leaves. I mean, I'm not really.
Yeah, I
would have
gone
yet.
From 5. I would say maybe now I would say depending on how serious they are in doing it, I would peg it maybe around 10% myself. If they push it harder and start playing it more and more, maybe it gets to 15 or 20%. I think Tampa, I still think it's a good spot, too good of a spot there with that team being as good and as deep as it is. And certainly I think if he left, he's still young, but I think he certainly wants to, I think he probably wants to get at least one Stanley Cup ring in Tampa before he would sort of venture out and head to other markets first.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And the Leafs, you know, Mitch Marner's playing in London tonight. That's like a home game for him. And and the Leafs are bringing in like a lot of guys. We might go into like 2 minutes overtime, but the Leafs are bringing in a lot of guys, so they don't have to play their young guys. And we hear all kinds of conflicting stuff coming out of Leafs camp. They might still be a bottom five team, but they're going to try harder than that. And then they're going to have to just fail to actually fail, right? Because Babcock's not going to want to lose.
No, but again, they're in such a spot right now where I think Babcock probably has to keep the long view in mind. And I do think I think he can absorb the losing if he feels that even with with limited talent in the lineup that the team is giving him an honest day's effort, and I think you can sort of stomach that for a little bit as long as you.
Sure.
If bad habits creep in, that's where you know you're going to get the wrath of Babcock. I don't think there's any question about that. But you know, this is what he signed off for. He's being compensated very handsomely in hockey. You know, in the biggest, you know, one of the biggest market in hockey.
$50 million, not bad.
Exactly. Yeah, this is what he wanted, and this is, you know, this is what he's hoping to build between himself and Kyle Dubas, and of course Lou Lamoriello there, which was one of the most fascinating things of the offseason, seeing that move occur. But again, certainly with Shanahan's history with Lewis, it isn't as much of a surprise as many people might have pegged it to be. But, again, Toronto's going to continue to be a team to watch and see how they develop. And actually, I think a lot of people are going to look at and see whether or not, depending on where they finish, who finishes further up. Will the new-look Sabres finish a little ahead of them? That'll be one of the big questions, I think, that we're going to have, in that, certainly in the Atlantic Division this year.
It will be. All right, well, that's it for this Off the Post. We'll catch everybody next time.
Take care, everybody.